for the event is at Dean College, Alumni Memorial Hall. The entrance is on 60 School Street, and time is 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., so it's a four-hour window. The date is Saturday, March 23rd.
Here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, anywhere on the internet, WFPR.FM, and in the local Franklin, Mass. FM radio dial 102.9, here in the studio in the gorgeous facility today with our town councilor, Glenn Jones. Glenn, happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday, Steve. Good to see you again, my friend. Boy, it's been some time since we've last sat and chatted about
specifically on the master plan. Yep. It was like, when did we last talk? And it was like, oh, February 6, 2023.
It's been a little over a year since we last discussed this issue, and it's nice to get back and kind of give an update on where we are and where we're headed.
Well, you've been kind of busy. I know I've been kind of busy. I've caught some meetings. I haven't been able to, but that's part of the thing. So we're going to kind of take the folks through. Mm-hmm. At the time we talked,
yes,
over a year ago, you and your counselors had just been appointed, but the rest of the committee had not yet been.
That's correct.
So now you've got the 13 people, mm-hmm, divvied up, five different subcommittees. You've got three or four different meetings, five meetings a week. Mm-hmm. You've got some big events coming up. So, yeah.
We do.
And listeners, just be patient. We'll walk through this slowly. You don't have to take some notes. We'll have some notes. We'll have some links. But listen along as we tell the story of this Master Plan Update Committee.
Thank you, Steve. As you so eloquently put it, yes, we last met on February 6th, and that was just after the Town Council approved to adopt a resolution to create a 13-person member committee for an opportunity to update the existing 2013 Master Plan, to project the hopes and dreams of the citizens at large to see what we ultimately would like to see the town of Franklin be in the next 10 years. Yeah. So we're ultimately building the 2023 master plan. And as we discussed back on February 6th, the council had 13 members that we needed to seat on this committee. So we had actually put out an invitation to the community as well, mm-hmm, as reached out to the various boards to gain members. And we did finally establish that board. So just by way of explanation, this is the makeup of the board. Starting at the top, myself, Glenn Jones, I'm the chairman of the Master Plan Committee. The vice chair is Kobe Frangillo. The clerk of the Master Plan is fellow councilor Melanie Hamblin, as well as Kobe, he's a town councilor. From the planning board, we have Jennifer Williams and Rick Power. From the Zoning Board of Appeals, we have Bruce Hunchard. And from the Conservation Commission, we have Megan Hagen. Mm-hmm. Now, we have six at-large members that have come on. The first member is Kenneth Elmore, who just so turns out to be the president of Dean College, he's doing great efforts in making connections with the town of Franklin. This is one of the ways that he does that.
He brings certainly a wealth of to the conversation wherever he is. So,
yes, he does. He's a well-spoken individual, and he's well-versed, and it's great to have him on our committee. Yeah. The other at-large member is Aaron Gallagher, Joseph Halligan, Janelle Lang, Eric Seltzer, and, of course, Gino Carlucci. Our staff members from the town are Brian DeBerner, the Director of Planning and Development, and Amy Love, the town planner.
Sure.
As part of this joint cooperation, we also have consultants who have been hired on through the town, known as Beta Group and Barrett Planning Group. They're kind of a joint venture in helping us to build this master plan.
As I understand it, certainly did some of, and I'll phrase it like the lead work, the data work, the detail work to update kind of the inventory.
That's
and
correct.
A lot of the details, which it spared you as a committee doing that, but they had to do all that detail work under your guidance, under the planning guidance, in order for that to be part of this full plan.
Yes, this has been, from the moment we actually had our first meeting, it's been a very close collaboration with the consultants. Their main task from the get-go was to help us create a timeline, and one of the first things that needed to be created was the inventory and assessment plan, which is basically going back and looking at the current inventory within the town. And an example, for instance, would be the current zoning that we have, the current zoning maps that we have, and reviewing, say, for instance, economic opportunity areas, mm-hmm. and saying, okay, we know back in 2013 we had 6 existing economic opportunity areas, but after this 10-year period, things have changed.
Right.
And they've noticed that, for instance, the Pond Street property has sold, and that their maps and
there's a few things that need to get updated, right, along the way if they haven't already been.
Yep. And that falls under our inventory.
You sure.
know, these zones, right, and everything else. And it was their responsibility to come up with that document. I have a draft copy of that document right here. This document is available online for anybody who wants to take a look at it, if anyone has any questions, they can mm-hmm. always contact me. But that was their main goal. While we worked with them, they had actually given us feedback as to what direction each individual subcommittee. Now I'm going to talk a little bit about what the master plan is.
You have 5, which, if I recall correctly, was part of that discussion. Because initially, mm-hmm. I think the prior effort had 4.
Yes.
And it was kind of a thread that ran through them, mm-hmm. in terms of sustainability.
That's correct.
You created that as a separate group. So.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And just by way of explanation, I think I'll read what I have for the public here.
Mm-hmm.
A master plan, also known as a comprehensive plan, or a general plan, is a strategic document that outlines a municipality's vision for its future growth, development, and land use over a long period of time, typically ranging from 10 to 20 years or more. It serves as a framework to guide decision-making and develop initiatives within the town. The Town of Franklin Master Plan is a 10-year plan, and the key components to the master plan are, 1, goals and policy statements, which identify our goals and policies for the municipality for future growth and development. 2, land use, that defines the types of development permitted in the different city areas, such as residential, commercial, industrial, and recreational zones. This element relates to the proposed standards of population density and building intensity to the capacity of land available or to plan facilities and services. The next one is circulation element. This provides an inventory of existing and proposed circulation. Now, circulation simply means transportation and the ways that you get about town.
The modes, so mm-hmm. traffic,
yep.
roads, streets, bikes, walks, whatever.
And trust me, that is a particularly daunting task, because I think we can all understand the traffic in Franklin has grown significantly, especially since some of the newer developments that have shown up on, say, particular East Central Street and even some more downtown, has caused some traffic issues and therefore circulation issues that I know Kobe Frangello, who actually sits on that one,
mm-hmm.
is looking forward to addressing. And, that, yeah. and I know there's going to be ways that we can mitigate these problems. Additional parking, coming up with bike lanes,
right.
Making better, adding more sidewalks where sidewalks are necessary, and then coming up with a traffic pattern that's ultimately going to serve our community better than it currently does.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's housing plans, which the availability, that really all depends on the availability, affordability, the quality of the housing within our city, including strategies for addressing homelessness and housing shortages, economic development, which identifies the strategies to promote economic growth, attract businesses, create jobs, enhance the overall economic vitality of the city, and of course, environmental sustainability, which includes measures to protect natural resources, preserve green spaces, promote energy efficiency, manage waste, mitigate the impacts of climate change, and infrastructure plans for essential public services for facilities such as water, supply, sanitation, utilities, schools, healthcare facilities and parks, and of course, community facilities. These address the need for community's facilities and amenities such as the library, community center, the senior center, all the different parks, all of our recreation facilities, and supports residents' overall quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is also historic and cultural preservations. These strategies are to protect and preserve historic buildings, neighborhoods, and cultural heritage sites. Now, of course, being the town of Franklin and have an established namesake of Ben Franklin, many people might not even realize that one of the biggest cultural heritages in the town of Franklin is the fact that the founder of the public school system, Horace Mann, was actually born and raised in Franklin. And
studied with Ben's books. He benefited from that.
Many people probably don't even realize that there's a monument dedicated to him over on East Central Street, right at the Shaw's supermarket, because that was his family's farm.
Sure.
And these are little things like that that we need to talk about as a community on how do we improve transparency in regards to some of the heritage and cultural aspects of the community.
Right.
And that's where this comes in with the master plan. We do now, and it's funny because it's actually, I was looking at the date the other day, it's almost been close to 8 years that we did the Horace Mann statue. Was it 8 years or 6 years?
Yeah, just about.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. At the corner Emmons.
Correct, at 150 Emmons Street.
Yeah,
yep.
Definitely.
And I was driving by the other day, and I'm thinking to myself,
there's not many communities that have that many bronze statues.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got Hats Off in front of the museum. Yep. We've got Horace Mann, and we've got Ben.
Yep.
There's at least three that I can think of immediately right downtown.
And how many people actually know where they are, what they are, what they mean? And these are things that we need to work on, culturally speaking.
Right.
And of course,
which is an aspect of this. So
it is.
It, as opposed to and to help bring it, I mean, why you've spent time, and we could spend hours just on the scope and the details and what it means, but for the Facebook folk who, you know, sit behind the keyboard, don't necessarily get out, is the master plan, literally the master plan, within which a lot of the actions, whether they're zoning guidelines and or policy procedure changes, would then get structured and or adjusted as we go forward.
That's correct. And part of this process, and I know I spoke about the beginning process of establishing the committee and then ultimately establishing subcommittees, and of course, Bader Barrett establishing the inventory and assessment reports, is once we've gathered as much of the public input as we can, we're going to go into a phase known as the implementation phase. And that's usually the most daunting task of the whole master plan, because what we actually have to do is assess the goals and objectives that we've accumulated, we've put into the update of the master plan, and then we basically have to put numbers behind them and say to ourselves, okay, what are we going to do? What's it going to take to implement these goals and make a plan and ultimately meet those goals?
Mm-hmm.
But like any goal that we set, some being a little more extravagant when it comes to like circulation, a little more broad, or something even more specific like housing or setting up zoning, that's all going to take money, and that's all going to take a good long-term plan to set those goals, because ultimately that's what the planning department in the town of Franklin is going to use as their master document for the next 10 years.
Yeah, and in some of those actions become kind of your town council goals that then work through economic development and or whatever committees to then come forward in terms of the zoning bylaw changes.
Yes.
Some may foster like the rail trail extension to downtown. Obviously, the town needs to be willing, but we also need a party from the state indoor CSX or whatever the rail operation is in order to come to the table to work that out. Those things don't happen overnight.
They don't. They don't. And even if they were to happen, and that's always one of the council's goals is to extend the rail trail, for instance, even if we were able to secure something like that, just the process alone, just going through the bureaucracy, something as simple as just getting land swapped between the town over at the dump and the land
dump
by
and
the state.
The dump and land swap was the other piece. Like, it's been taking 10 or 15 years
right,
so
it's
far.
Like 15 years. Because bureaucracy moves at a snail's pace. It's just so hard to get these things done. But this at least allows us, setting up the master plan and setting up these goals and objectives with the public's input, ultimately gives us a broader picture of what we would ultimately like the town to look like 10, 15 years from now, and we can work towards those goals. Now, are some of those goals going to be achievable? Well, let's be honest. There are some goals, as we were going our way through the 2000 master plan, that weren't complete. Why weren't they complete? Well, this could have been various reasons.
Sure.
One is they weren't of a high priority. Or two, they just weren't really goals that ultimately ended up being something the community had such a large interest in that they wanted to pursue it.
Aspirational kind of wishful things as opposed to, if we can get to it, we'd like to do that. But in the meantime, oh, by the way, maybe we need to do this.
And even some of those goals and aspirations might not be ones that suit today's culture or suit today's needs.
Right.
And we have to kind of think ahead of ourselves, right? What are we going to look like 10 years from now? One of the things many people don't actually realize, and I know you've talked about this at length, I know Mr. Barrett's talked about this at length, we aren't a town. We're a city. We're a city known as the town of Franklin. And going the direction that we're going, there's only a high expectation that our growth is going to continue significantly in the next 10, 20, and even 30 years, because it's just so bloody difficult to afford to live in the city that more and more people are going to continue to make their way out to here. And we need to be prepared for that.
Right.
That requires housing, that requires investments into our educational system, that continued circulation with our roads and everything else, as well as meeting the continuous needs of our large and small businesses.
Right.
So there's a lot to
that. There's a lot. And then for the listeners and the reference point, certainly the Franklin for All project, while it came up with, I think, 11 recommendations, some number of those have actually come through. Mm-hmm. There's still some that are left. But I think, as I recall, a bunch of those are left for you to evaluate and then bring forward as part of the master plan.
That's correct.
As opposed to kind of working off on them separately. It makes more sense to kind of like...
gel them.
Yep. Yeah. Kind of pass the baton to you, refine your stuff, respectfully, you meaning the global committee and the subcommittees.
That's correct.
And then bring it back for, this is where we want to go with what the latest and greatest info we have, and this is what we need to do.
That's correct. There are, it's basically a big puzzle, and it's about taking what useful information we already have, kind of piecing it and refining it into the master plan. But what's nice is, for instance, the Conservation Commission had already set up an open space and recreation
which Brickley and Company did, you know,
which was beautiful. 20
something meetings and forums and produced. Now that entire piece is part of yours.
That automatically just ties right into the master plan.
Correct.
And then the schools, many people might not even realize that the schools themselves are actually building, well, the school committee, have spoken with the chair of the school committee, David, and he's mentioned that they're going to be working towards their own ultimate master plan.
Their comprehensive facility planning stuff.
And portions of that are going to make it...
Specifically from the facilities perspective, are going to tie into this piece.
Correct. Yeah. It's going to be a very large branch off of a small part of the master plan that refers to their plan.
Yeah.
Just like the open space is also a large branch that kind of stems off the master plan. Many of the things that are in the master plan actually are general references to what are already existing or soon to be existing documents.
The town had already done their housing plan.
Yep.
Housing production plan, I think, was the technical term.
That's correct.
A hazard mitigation plan, I think, gets referenced somewhere along the way. So there's a number of pieces.
Stormwater. And
end up filling into different sections. This truly is, no pun intended, this truly is the master plan.
It is.
That has multiple components.
Yes. There's a lot of moving parts to it, no doubt about it.
Which is why on the school side, I was telling them, and fortunately they heard that advice, that in order to avoid confusion, they can't call that master plan school plan. They can't call it master. So they call this comprehensive facility planning or something like that. But respectfully, master, it is a master plan.
Yes.
But just for schools. You can't confuse the two
because
heaven forbid.
it does ultimately fall under community services and facilities portion of that. That will all tie in. So to help kind of alleviate what would have been a bigger picture headache for the whole committee to kind of break down all of these various components to which we are legally obliged to meet from the state's from state law. We as a committee have broken up into various subcommittees.
Right, so you get one master plan update committee.
That's correct.
And then five subcommittees
that address the various content areas. Mm-hmm. So what we've done, and just give you just by way of explanation, the community master plans are often created through collaboration between city planners, government officials, urban designers, stakeholders, community members. They provide a roadmap for sustainable and equitable development, guiding future policies, regulations, investments, and projects within our city. Additionally, the master plans are periodically reviewed and updated to adapt to changing conditions emerging from challenges involving community needs. To address these various components, however, the master plan committee has assigned five subcommittees. The subcommittees consist of the following. One, land use and zoning. That's actually a combination of two things.
Which is one of the key critical pieces, that is clearly.
That's probably one of the biggest.
Right.
Because what I think many people don't realize is that the town of Franklin is actually the largest landowner in the town. Mm-hmm. And we have to look at the use of these existing lands and make a logical assessment as to where we hope to use these lands in mm-hmm. the future for future public use,
right.
as well as future public zoning in order to continue growth. Because mm-hmm. one of the things that I know Tom brought up at our recent town council meeting is we don't have, and Kobe brought it up as well, is we don't currently have enough sufficient growth to offset the expenses.
Correct.
In order to maintain a balanced budget mm-hmm. and meet the needs of the community as a whole. So we always have to be thinking big picture
right.
when it comes to land use and zoning issues
right.
because it's ultimately is what is going to garner our future growth.
Mm-hmm.
And that is probably one of the biggest parts of this whole master plan. So therefore, it's actually made up of six members. The chair is Janelle Lang. The members are Joe Halligan, Bruce Hunchard, Jennifer Williams, Gino Carlucci, and Aaron Gallagher. They actually met last night. I know you had an opportunity to speak with Janelle at one point yourself. What did you think?
I'm in my overall piece, I'm impressed with the work. Clearly, there's a lot of grunt work,
mm-hmm.
respectfully. There's a lot of details. There's a lot of conversation. And I understand why some people may be saying, I'm going to wait until something comes out because there's an awful lot of discussions that respectfully will, you know, it's like, why are we talking about this? Well, all of those have to happen in order to get to a point where the five or the six
right.
can agree to bring something forward to the larger committee
yes.
and then to the community
yes.
to say, okay, we've done this analysis. Mm-hmm. We've spent the time.
Yep.
And respectfully, I know it's going to take some time
yep.
to do all that. And I applaud them for doing that because
yep.
it is a boatload of work.
It is a boatload of work. But ironically, when I read to the rest of the committees, you'll actually realize that many of the content areas, such as the next one, housing and economic development, tie into land use and zoning.
Of course.
So this whole thing, all of these pieces are all interlinked. And
mm-hmm.
there's some, if I were to take a big board and draw strings to all the different areas,
you would end up getting
right,
tied in knots.
It would. Because everything in some way or sense ties to something else.
Sure.
And
yeah.
land use and zoning, ultimately will be the biggest thing because it ultimately decides what we're going to be using everything.
That sets the playing field.
It's almost
in that analysis in terms of if you can do this
yep.
you can't do that here.
A great analogy is it's like the base of this table.
Right.
It's setting the foundation and the base as to what everything else is going to be built upon.
Sure.
Because we can't build housing without land. We can't have economic growth without
mm-hmm.
good zoning. And so on and so forth. And
right.
those need to be set in place. And ultimately, the people responsible for that are the council. Because what I think many people don't understand is, like, besides our responsibility to the taxpayers and the budget, we also set the economic growth based on how land is used,
sure.
based on zoning.
And
whether it's overlays.
You don't do that in an isolated chamber. You use the master plan
yes.
and then the Economic Development Committee and
yep.
then respectfully the Planning Board, because any proposal comes up usually goes through the Economic Development, goes
yep.
off to Planning Board, comes back, generally with a recommendation
mm-hmm.
one way or the other,
mm-hmm.
which then you in your role yep. then decide.
And I think based, if anybody watched the last town council meeting, I think people realized that even just two small rezones, just two small parcels mm-hmm. being rezoned to a different zone, it brings a lot of passion from the community, because what that gets changed to could or could not have right. a dramatic effect on the feel or the outcome of a neighborhood or a portion of sure. our community.
And I think respectfully, 90, maybe 95%, without having done the math, the back of the napkin math would be 95% of what it would be zoned for probably would be fine for the existing neighborhood.
Right.
But the speculation, at least, was one or two of those pieces, were not. So it's a tough discussion.
It's a very passionate topic. And mm-hmm. and because it does ultimately decide what goes where. And as the old expression goes, nobody wants it in my backyard.
Right.
And that's always one of the toughest things that we have to struggle with at the council mm-hmm. is where who, what, where, when, and why, and what's the impact it's ultimately going to have on the people in the community. That's our job.
Of course.
Is to think about everybody.
Of course. And then even from
the big picture.
The other relationship that people don't fully understand is the town can only do so much. Mm-hmm. There's a landowner and potential business owners. Those are the ones who, within whatever the town guidelines, the foundation yeah. that you've set, mm-hmm. can do what they do mm-hmm. based upon going through the process to make sure that, yay, verily, that they do cover this, they do cover that, and, oh, by the way, they need something special here, they can apply for that, right? But the town doesn't get to determine, we're going to do that there.
Nope. And Steve, it's so funny you say that. This is as relative to the topic, so I don't want to get too far off topic. But a classic example of that, myself having been involved in economic development for the town for so long, is everybody would love to see the downtown developed. And everyone's got grandiose plans as to what mm-hmm. the downtown could look like.
Could do.
But yeah. it means nothing if the property owners and the residents who live there want nothing to do with it, because they're the stakeholders. They're the ones who hold all the cards. What we would like to see, what we would like to do, means nothing if we don't have the help and the cooperation of the property owners.
Right.
And that's what many people don't understand. There are very distinct boundaries between public property and the public welfare and what's managed by the town mm-hmm. and private property ownership. What a private property person wants yeah. to do with their property, so long as it's within their zones, mm-hmm. and so long as it's within the guidelines and regulations of the state, can do whatever they want.
Sure.
We have very little control over
within
that.
Within the guidelines, absolutely.
Or yeah. even worse, nothing at all.
Or nothing at all, just sits there.
That's the problem. And that's like, for instance, Worcester ran into that problem with some of their properties, where basically it became a health hazard mm-hmm. or became a community
sure. yeah.
blight. And they had to address it from the city level. Hope and dream is that never becomes an issue for us.
Well, and at least from what I understand, working with and reporting on the Board of Health, they do have a abandoned property, if that's the proper term
yes.
for it, or dilapidated property. There is a term whereby Board of Health,
yes.
Building Commissioner, Police and Fire coordinate with the state,
yes.
because there's some state legal things that
yes.
they can do as well
yes.
to address
yeah.
whatever it is with the owner. In some
yep.
cases, they're remote owners and or not,
yep.
you know, based property can, you know, a person may respectfully pass, not leave air.
Yep.
Now it's owned by some bank in East Chippewa or whatever.
Steve, that's funny you say that, because you know who sponsored that? Me.
Of course.
2010. That was the blight property law that we put together working mm-hmm. with the town administrator at the time, Jeffrey
sure.
Nutting.
Sure.
Because we didn't have anything
no,
with the books at the
no.
time.
And so it's working, because I know there are some years that are busier than others,
yeah.
And some that are not. So
yeah.
at least we have some tools in the tool chest.
We did, because from what I learned back when we actually established that legislation in 2010 was, since we were coming out of the recession, we had a fair amount of properties that were falling into disarray
yes.
and becoming a health hazard and a safety hazard
sure.
to the community. So by establishing that blight property law, now property owners had to be responsible to make their properties safe or be fined a $300 a day fee
mm-hmm.
for not making it safe.
Correct.
And as part of that, they actually had to register whatever chemicals or materials or whatever were on the property with
the
fire chief
sure.
so that they knew what type of fire hazards were associated with that.
Yeah.
So it made an impact, because, it, like you said, it wasn't just reaching out to the local property owners. It could have been someone was out of town.
Yep.
There was some business that took a hold of that property.
Sure.
Whereas before, we didn't have the right to do that.
No.
So now we do. No. You're absolutely right. So moving on, the second subcommittee is housing and economic development. So we have housing and economic development are actually two distinct things, but we've tied them into one subcommittee to address these issues. The chair of that subcommittee is Kenneth L. Moore. The members are Rick Power and Kobe Frangillo.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is community services, facilities, and circulation, which sounds like a really daunting name, is chaired by Kobe Frangillo. The members are Kenneth L. Moore, Aaron Gallagher, Janelle Lang. The next one, no, you had actually brought this up earlier, and actually I'll read this one first, and then I'll read that one later. Open space and recreation and natural, cultural, historic resources, which you were so keen to point out not to do acronyms, so I have to take a look into that. But the chair of that committee is Megan Hagen. Myself, Rick Power, and Melanie Hamblin. It seems like a really big subcommittee, but as I mentioned earlier, the whole open space and recreation portion of that plan, for the most part, is already done and already existing. We had to make a couple of small editorial changes to that portion
in the master plan. The other piece, too, is I certainly, from what I understood, that plan went to the state. I don't know if...
It hadn't yet. I think it actually just went to the state, because they Rick Elia said it came back for revision or something.
Oh, okay. So it's still in that pre-approval process.
I think so. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah. Because that was one of the things that I'd been tracking and trying to keep aware of. And certainly Rick Elia I've talked with. We participated in some of their open hearings and stuff. Saw the review. She had some public hearings as it's similarly. She was doing that process, which you're doing now. And then it went to the state, and I hadn't heard anything as to where it would have happened since. Yeah. I know it's going to come back to you at some point.
It is.
But,
It still has to actually come for a full council overview presentation.
Right.
I'm looking forward to that. And, of course, the final fifth committee is, as you mentioned so eloquently before,
sustainability.
Because in the 2013 master plan, the sixth goal of the goals and objectives that were in that plan were all in some shape or form relative to sustainability. But since we felt this was kind of a broad term that should really encompass everything in and of itself, we've created a subcommittee specifically for sustainability, and it addresses all of the components that are in the master plan. The chair for that committee is Gino Carlucci.
Yep.
The membership is Melanie Hamblin and Eric Stelzer. I know they met recently. Gino just recently retired, and it's keen to have him on board because he's
been a long-time planner.
He's got a bunch of experience.
Yes.
So it's great to have him on board for that, and they're doing a great job.
Yeah.
So with that, one of the things that we are looking for from the community, and this is one of hopefully several outreaches I make between now and March 23rd, is we're going to be putting together what is the master plan's significantly sizable open house.
Okay.
And our hope is to reach out to the public on March 23rd from 11 to 3 p.m. I know it's a busy Saturday, but to come to Dean College, who's hosting this event, and try to give us as much input in regards to the various content areas that we just discussed today. Because we are looking to move to the next phase, which is the implementation phase, but we still need as much public input as we can get.
Yeah, and you had, in terms of reference, I know you did a survey. You've had
that's correct.
A number of meetings where people can participate.
That's
individual
correct.
Committees, I think, have also started doing some of their kind of outreach, public engagement type sessions, a la the library. Two of the subcommittees were there this past weekend, so I stopped in and had some conversations. So while those have been kind of building too, this is kind of the one big event. Talk to us. We need to hear what you're talking about.
Based on what you just said and all of those various kind of sidebar public input meetings that have been going on, this is kind of bringing all of those together into one room.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to set up posts in what is the Alumni Memorial Hall over at Dean College, where each subcommittee is going to be setting up some type of either interactive or board or something that's engaging for the public to come in and kind of gauge us with some type of input for those content tiers. You know, it's funny because we're still actually in the process of, we're still in the planning process for this.
Yeah.
What it's ultimately going to look like and what it's going to be is still kind of in the works.
Yeah.
We do have a master plan meeting tomorrow night at 6:30 to discuss these issues. So if anybody would like to come down and partake in that meeting, we'll be discussing ultimately what the event will look like on the 23rd. But it will be bringing all of the subcommittees together into one place to offer the community an opportunity to engage. And the nice part about it is the room that we're going to be hosting in the Alumni Memorial Hall at Dean College. It's a really beautiful room, and it's just off of the entrance to the gym. So when you come up School Street at 60 School Street, you're going to enter in the side door, and when you enter in, it's this absolutely grand room. And we're going to set up various stations within
around the room
so people can kind of mingle.
So effectively, the individual subcommittees can have their individual discussions on this and that. And clearly, you can, you should visit multiple, because as we've already talked, they're integrated and they're tied in some ways to one to another.
They are. And through the kindness of Dean College, our hosts, refreshments are going to be served. Dean College and has been kind enough to provide refreshments for the event. So besides providing the open space for us to have it in at the Alumni Hall, they are kind enough to provide refreshments. And that's always a keen thing, especially around lunchtime, because that's exactly when the event's going to be.
Especially on a normal Saturday from 11 to 3, I know from a family perspective, kids are going in three different directions or more, and you've got other errands to run in between, so you're juggling a bunch, but then you can stop by, visit a table or two, grab a quick bite.
Yes.
That sounds like a good thing.
It does. So by way of explanation, I'll just give some input. The location for the event is at Dean College, Alumni Memorial Hall. The entrance is on 60 School Street, and time is 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., so it's a four-hour window. The date is Saturday, March 23rd. Again, refreshments are available, and everyone is invited to attend.
Sure.
And I heard rumor that Congressman Jake Auchincloss is going to be in town on the same day, so maybe we can entice him
to just stop
to
by.
Stop in and say hi. Mm-hmm. Attract some of the public to join us on the public input event. So,
sure. Yep. All well and good.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So, recapping, master plan has been fully functioning. I know I've been sharing through the Franklin.news, Franklin Matters, the kind of weekly schedule of your master plan update meetings and the various subcommittee meetings. As I said earlier, I think there's usually four or five during the course of any particular given
week. That's correct.
The major ones are certainly the master plan update committee. Those I know are broadcast. I share those the next day so that if people do miss a particular meeting, you can go back to YouTube and view the video.
Yes, through Franklin TV and in our YouTube station, they can review any of the various master plan committee meetings, not necessarily the subcommittees but they can definitely do the master plan. And also, just by way of explanation with a schedule and a date, our next full council, our next master plan meeting is tomorrow, March 6th at 6:30 in the training room at the municipal building. If people would like to come by and give us some input during that event, we'd love to hear them as well. We also have, as I said, the March 23rd event. That's our open house, but we have additional dates for our master plan. And just by quick review, April 10th, May 8th, May 15th, June 12th, June 26th, July 10th, July 24th, August 1st, September 9th, our hope, if things go well, we'll be presenting a draft to the planning board, and by September 18th on my agenda, if things go well, we'll be giving a draft to the town council.
Okay.
So it's a short timeline.
In terms of the formal approval process, and you started there, the master plan goes to the planning board first.
Correct.
Then goes to the town council.
That's correct.
And then goes to the state.
That's correct.
And the state may say you dropped a bit here or whatever. You didn't fully elucidate that. But generally, from our, at least my reporting experience, when we give something to the state, generally it's in great shape and the state says, yay, verily, go. Occasionally, I guess maybe in this open space one, there was something that needed a little bit of tweaking, whatever. Yeah. But yeah,
that's correct.
That's all well and good.
So.
All right, well, thank you for taking some time to share that recap.
I appreciate your time.
Hopefully, at this point, it sounds like we won't wait another year to talk about master plan.
No. No, in fact.
We have plenty of things to do between now and September.
Yes, and hopefully, if we have the opportunity, I'd love to sit down with you again and say a month after we get the feedback from the public on the March 23rd date to kind of give a recap of what that feedback was.
Yeah.
And then we can talk about what's going to be the next major step, of course, which is finishing up the goals and objectives and then getting into the implementation portion.
Yeah, because once you do the goals and objectives, I think you have a review process within that as well.
We do.
Okay.
Because as part of the review processes, we still have to say we have to pick goals and objectives because there's so many goals and objectives to choose from that we have to whittle them down into what would ultimately be implementable.
Right. What can be
goals
doable.
And objectives. Yeah. Right. It's like, what can we do here? Yeah. What is actually going to fit? Because we're going to get a lot of great ideas and a lot of good goals from the community, and a lot of the goals may seem somewhat broad and maybe not something we might actually be able to either have the means to tackle in the next 10 years, maybe put them off to the next master plan, but keep those goals or ideas kind of
and in
sitting
terms
in a basket.
Of, you know, from a practical versus aspirational rating scale, you know, where do they fit on that?
Right.
And the wording clearly is always going to be key because, okay, when you say do this, well, does that this for you mean the same thing as that this for me?
Right.
That's, you know, the devil's in that detail. Right. So
You're right. You're right. And that's really where all the wording's going to come in when this is all said and done. And also, and I think I'm thinking kind of further ahead here, once this becomes a draft plan to the planning board, we'll also be able to get their feedback.
Oh, sure.
And this is still always going to be a living, breathing document until
members
it is.
Now, but then the full board gets to do their formal review.
And then ultimately the council.
Correct, because you've got three members of the council, but then the other six.
That's correct.
Who may have been peripherally aware, may have done something along the way, but now they get that formal review
and
piece.
We will be given that presentation, and hopefully, knock on wood, it's, and I know it's not wood, we'll be doing that in September. But like you said, it's a long process. We have a lot of steps to take, and we have a long way to go and a short time to get there, as that country song goes.
Yes.
So
indeed.
Thanks,
Steve. Well, thank you again.
Thank you.
And thank you to listeners. We'll have rich links in the show notes. Certainly the master plan page will have most of the links, but we'll highlight some of the key pieces that we've referenced as well. And a quick final reminder, we do this because Franklin matters. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. And by the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.